Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in the Upper Peninsula and was a pioneer turning Orlando, Florida from swampland to America's entertainment capital. A modern-day visionary, he sees Michigan's future as golden. His 35-plus year career has included the energy, construction, real estate, telecommunications, IT, and entertainment industries. In 1999, he was awarded the prestigious Ellis Island Medal of Honor. His name, Mike Sirouk. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Mike Sirouk, a modern-day visionary and futurist. Mike, can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and dad?
Yes, thank you, Jack. First, it is great to be back home in Michigan. My early sort of memories, we came to this country when I was five. Mom and Dad were Ukrainians who were conscripted, and they were actually DPs. That stands for displaced people. Their homeland was annihilated, and they ended up being, in essence, in a labor camp outside of Dachau for almost 3 years. The camp was liberated. Mom and Dad moved to a sort of a halfway house in France, little town of Bussy-en-Nuth, where I was born. And 5 years later, we finally got passage to this country, and we had a sponsor in this country. Back then, you had to have a sponsor. And Pop borrowed some money for passage, and so we came aboard the SS America in March of 55, landed in New York, got on a train, and went up to the little town of Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. And it must have been a strange sight for us to arrive in the wintertime up there. And we got enrolled in school. Initially, Don and I were put in the same class. Don was 2 years older than I was. And in short order, we learned the English language. And Don was moved 2 grades ahead of me. I was in the first grade, and he was moved to the third grade. And, you know, growing up, typical small town America.
What were the biggest things you learned from your mom, Mike, and what were the biggest things you learned from your dad?
Well, I guess the biggest thing I learned from my mom, she never learned to drive, and she had a very difficult time. She never really learned to write in English. So I would read to her, and I took a tremendous interest in the English language. I really became somewhat of a scholar and liked to write and learned to speak English very well. And she taught me Ukrainian, obviously, and French, and I still keep those languages today. But Pop, I guess the biggest influence that Pop had, he studied very hard to get his citizenship. And he used to meet with his friends out on the street, and he used to remark how he had 3 sons. The oldest son, Don, he said he's going to go on to do great things. Mikey, he's going to be an engineer. He knew from early on I was going to be an engineer, but he said they can't do this one thing. And people would say, well, what do you mean they can't do this one thing? They said, well, they can't become president of the United States. He was intrigued by the concept that you had to have been born in this country to be president of the United States. And he honestly believed that you could do anything, that anything was possible. And he honestly believed that John would grow up to be president of the United States.
In spending time with you, you loved your dad. You told me that, quote, he told you, if you're not living on the edge, you're taking too much space.
That's correct.
Yeah.
What did he mean by that?
Well, I pop, as you can imagine, and I didn't really find out until, in my teens, the difficulties that they went through, because we never talked about it. But Pop always, he always viewed problems as opportunities to overcome. And even today, when people ask me, well, what do you do? I say, well, I'm a builder and a problem solver. Because I think if you sort of try to set up and solve problems and look for solutions, that has served me very well through my professional career.
We're with Mike Saruk. Mike, how did you ever get started in business?
Well, that's a good question, Jack. And I guess coming to this country when I was a little tight, learning the English language, I remember my first sort of real project. I was 12 years old, and we were living in a tiny, really a one-bedroom house. We didn't have indoor plumbing until I literally was 12, where I drew up a set of plans and helped with the contractor to build our first indoor plumbing and our first real three-bedroom addition to the house. And so from that day on, I always had a hammer and tools and was always building things.
Maybe that's why you're interested in this poop to power things, even today. How did you ever get from that life in the UP down to Florida?
Well, I guess in every life there's sort of, as Yogi Berra said, when you come to a fork in the road, take one. And I was very fortunate. I met a beautiful gal, married her when I was a freshman attending Lake Superior State College. I had gotten a tremendous opportunity. We had a new president, Dr. Schuldeis, who actually asked me to run the facilities department. So here I was, a young kid, freshman, and I was literally in charge of the construction on the campus, had a new wife, and she always kept telling me that, let's move south. And I used to look at her and say, honey, I just don't really like Detroit because my sphere, that's as far south as I'd ever been in my life. So finally, one February, we got invited by an aunt and uncle, and we flew down to Warner Robins, Georgia. And for a young kid, in the Sioux, one of the jokes is we used to have electric cars up there because all the cars have plugs hanging out their radiators. They really weren't electric cars, but you had to plug them in so that they wouldn't freeze. And I remember getting to Atlanta, Georgia, and I didn't see any cars with any plugs in them, and everybody was laughing at me. And so that sort of broadened the horizons. And I literally put out a couple of resumes and immediately got recruited by a company called, at that time, Martin Marietta.
We're talking to Mike Saruk, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
Welcome back. We're with Mike Saruk, who was a pioneer in turning Orlando, Florida from swampland into America's entertainment capital. Mike, how did that happen?
Well, I wish I could take credit for it, but I think I was just one of the sort of worker bees. Again, I got recruited by a company called Martin Marietta, and at the time, the defense contractor had acquired significant parcels of land around their defense plant. And I was one of the facilities guys, so I wasn't really involved with the project, but I was involved with the buildings and all the property. And one of my projects was to develop a large-scale integration facility. And I ended up working with a team, and we selected property on East Orlando. And if you know anything about Orlando, Florida, East Orlando or East Orange County, back then was truly swampland. The property was cheap because it was swampland. It was actually in the floodplain of a thing called the Oconomowoc River Basin. And it wasn't you know, short order that all of us entrepreneurs sort of have this itch, and we chafe at too constrained. And I remember I was selected to go to, they used to call it Charm School in Martin Marietta. They take 20 of us executives and they take us off site. And part of the drill was write what your aspirations are. And I forget who the leader was, but I remember he asked me what my aspiration was. He said, well, I'm going to be president of this company. He looked at me like I was a little bit strange. He said, well, that's quite an aspiration. Maybe you should tone it down. Well, it was right then that I realized that, you know, it was really limiting. So I literally broke out on my own. I had an acquaintance who was developing a major energy group of companies. His name was Ken Lay, and that's sort of another chapter. I worked for Ken for 5 years. But then I decided that Central Florida, things were evolving, things were happening, and I guess the one sort of phrase that sticks in my mind that my dad used to always say is, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're probably right. And Orlando in those, this was in the 70s, pre-Disney, here we were Martin Marietta, one of the largest contractors, and word spread out that there was going to be an even larger employer. And we said, nah, who could that be? Well, literally overnight, Walt Disney, and I got occasion to meet Walt, and he just had this vision to create what he articulated really ended up being a thing called EPCOT, the Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow. That's what EPCOT stands for. And you talk about a visionary. He was a guy who said, you know, we're going to create sort of a whole new world where people live, work, and play. And, you know, some people say, well, it was a no-brainer. You had the climate. Well, we had a lot more than a climate. I was fortunate enough in those early years to sit on the Orlando Aviation Authority. You know, Orlando bought the airport from the Air Force for $10. I was there when the deed was transferred. So we, and it was the leadership of Orlando sort of coalesced around probably your key phrase, anything is possible. And there was a vitality, and everyone was working together to solve problems. There were a tremendous amount of problems, a tremendous amount of obstacles, but everybody just really pitched in and started building things.
We're talking to Mike Sarouk. Mike, your friends refer to you as a visionary, a futurist, a builder, problem solver. Tell us what you see the future of Michigan will be.
Well, 4 years ago, I got reacquainted with a fellow that was really one of my mentors by the name of Mike McElroy. There's a great video and a book out called The Smartest Guys in the Room. Starting on about page 33, my dear friend Mike McElroy is the one hero in that whole Enron saga. And Mike shares a lot of my ideas about solving this energy crisis, which to me is sort of one of the fundamental things. And I brought him up here to Michigan, and I said, what do you think? And we went up to a little town of Alma, which used to have a refinery, which was closed. And I got to tell you, we got such a positive response from the entire community that Mike looked at me and said, we're going to do a major project here in Michigan. So when you ask the question, you know, what do we think the vision is? It could still go either way. Okay, it could still go either way. It could be the story of the last one out, turn out the lights, but I don't think so. Because the one thing that Michigan has is what I call the software or the people capital that is absolutely irreplaceable. I mean, we've got the smarts, we've got the know-how. I mean, I learned my basic engineering skills. All the things that have served me well, I learned in Michigan. My roots are here. And for instance, Michigan currently has one of the largest natural gas deposits in North America. It was discovered in the 70s. I mean, Michigan is sitting on literally hundreds of billions of dollars worth of natural gas, yet it's not being developed. Why not? You know, and it's sort of the same thing with this whole energy industry. I'm very intrigued by the concept that Michigan is now putting in incentives for the entertainment capital. Well, you know, we created an entertainment capital without a whole lot of incentives. It was just people sort of bootstrapping up and making things happen. So I'm very bullish. You know, my wife thinks I'm crazy. Leave Florida to come up to Michigan in February and March. But again, to me, the real asset base are the people skills and the know-how and the talent.
A few months ago, we had John Furchill, the man that came from Cleveland to renovate the book Cadillac. Listening to him, listening to you, entrepreneurs come to this state and they see golden, unbelievable opportunity. You can't believe the price that you can buy land for here. You can't believe it. We see obstacles, baggage, excuses, problems. Mike Surok, how do we in Michigan change our thinking?
Well, when you ask that question, I'm sort of reminded of the joke about the fellow who is digging in a huge pile of manure. And he's digging way in over his head, throwing a shovel after shovel full out. And his friend says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Don't you understand you're digging in horse manure?" He said, "With this much manure, there must be one heck of a horse down here." and so I think it's a matter of perspective. When you're out away from some place, it's that old adage about an expert is a guy more than 50 miles away with a briefcase in his hands. You know, when you're removed, and in my case, where you grew up here and your roots are here, and then you come back, I think you have a different perspective. Now, how do you get the local folks, if you will, to adopt the perspective? I guess that's the challenge that guys like me and Mike McElroy and even our friend Boone Pickens is, you know, how do you inspire? I think it's the challenge that we're having right now with a new incoming president. You know, how do we paint the glass half full, and more importantly, how do we refill that glass? You know, I don't think there's any, quote, magic formula. I think it's just plain old hard work.
Robert Schuller, Crystal yes. Cathedral, Garden Grove, Hour of Power. You know, he's got the Possibility Thinker's Creed. When faced with a mountain, I won't quit. I'll go over the mountain. I'll go around the mountain. I'll go through the mountain. I'll go under the mountain. Us Cubs fans, we're going to get to the other side of the mountain. And I'm Jack Pasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Mike Surok, and his management company has completed projects in 10 states totaling over $1 billion. Mike, one of the many things I admire about you is you are a master at building relationships. Talk to us, how do we learn to network and build relationships?
Well, you know, I think you mentioned once, not too long ago, that there's no course in building relationships. I mean, you don't sign up for Relationship Building 101 or 102. And I think it's sort of like the taste for coffee. It's acquired. I also think that, you know, that it's got some ingredients in it that you can't do without. The first one and the most important one is you can't be afraid to fail. One of my favorite all-time stories was Thomas Edison, where people were laughing at him because everyone would say, well, how do you keep going? You failed to find the element that will work in a light bulb 25,000 times. He said, no. He said, I found 25,000 things that don't work. When I find all the things that don't work, then I'll find the thing that works. And it was like 1,000 times later, he found the tungsten. And I think if you're going to accomplish anything meaningful or worthwhile, you really can't be afraid to fail. Okay? And I try to instill in everyone that works around me that, gosh, I've failed more times than I can keep track of. But if you learn from your failures, you know, not that we encourage failures, but I think that's one of the big challenges is to encourage people to take risks. And when it doesn't work out, like Thomas Edison, you say, well, that doesn't work. So you learn from the things that don't work.
Mike Zurich, there's an art of getting disparate people and groups to come together and to make great things happen. The art of the impossible. I quote you, you've said, my job is to look ahead, or as Wayne Gretzky says, skate to where the puck will be. How do you get these disparate groups to come together?
Well, and I guess that's the other challenge or the fun part. And, you know, basically I view most projects, I'm a home builder. I'm a builder at heart. And to build a house, you first start with a plot of land and you build a good foundation and then you frame it up. I had the occasion about 15 years ago to build a house in a day. It was called the Miracle House for my dear friend John Walsh for the Adam Walsh Foundation. So we got literally 700 craftsmen together and we built a house in 20 hours and we delivered it and the family moved in. And boy, you talk about a challenge. And I think if you, as a leader, if you try to paint sort of what the end goal is so that everyone understands it, most people will try to finish the house, if you will, and get the roof on it, if they understand that that's their job. What I've found in business a whole lot, I do a lot of advising and consulting, and a lot of people refer to me as the turnaround guy. What I find usually is that there's people who don't really understand what the core mission, and so they're extremely frustrated. There's nothing as frustrating as not knowing what's expected of you. You're almost doomed to failure, or as another friend of mine says, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, each time expecting a different outcome.
You traverse between government, business, back and forth. You dance with both very effectively. What's the differences between dancing with business and dancing with government?
Wow. I guess I never thought about it that way. I guess I'm always trying to convince government to...
You know, you're so handsome, you could be on Dancing with the Stars. You know?
My wife would probably tell you I'd step on her feet, but... you know, that's a great question, particularly, and it's very timely because we seem to be looking to government to solve all the problems. And I'm one of those that believes, you know, like Ronald Reagan, that government won't solve the problems. A lot of times it is the problem. And I think what made this country great was that there was the balance of just enough regulation to protect and to allow people to fail. See, my sort of general feeling is that right now there's sort of a general consensus that failure's bad and that if we throw enough money at the problem, we're not going to fail. Well, you know, let me tell you a little bit about recent history. It wasn't too long ago, as a result of the Enron debacle, that the brilliant leaders in Congress passed Sarbanes-Oxley. It was supposed to solve and preclude anything like Enron. Well, Enron was about a billion-dollar meltdown. In the last 6 months, we've had $100 billion worth of meltdown. So that ought to teach us something, that regulations and more government aren't necessarily going to fix the problem. So I do. I spent a lot of time in Washington, trying to convince lawmakers and regulators that we have to unleash the entrepreneurial spirit. And I'm afraid we might be on the verge of losing a big chunk of that.
Talk to us as a visionary and a futurist. Talk to us about automobiles and how we'll move people in the future.
Wow. Well, I'm certainly not an expert on automobiles, although I do remember my first car was a Mustang, and I still tinker with cars. I think if the automobile industry would recognize that they're, first and foremost, they're in the people transportation and people moving business. I remember one time we had a startup company in digital imaging, and I went to Kodak, and I tried to explain to the chairman that they were in the imaging business. Well, he promptly showed me the door, and he said, you know, we're in the film business and in the chemical business. Thank you very much, Mr. Saruk. Go mind your own business. And not too many years later, digital imaging, and Kodak is now, you know, a shadow of his former self. I really think the American automobile industry is, like Yogi Berra said, it at the fork in the road again. Pick one. I don't know that there's any single answer. I don't think it's necessarily battery cars. I think it's sort of a menu. I, for one, am a big believer. As you know, our project in Alma is going to be making synthetic kerosene. From a pure physics standpoint, kerosene fuel, which is what jets burn, which is a derivative of wood, has 50% more energy in it than gasoline. So if you, let's say you started burning kerosene in diesel engines, which you can, as a matter of fact, there are now BMWs, and a lot of the cars in Europe are running on kerosene, they get 40% better gas mileage. You know, I think that is one of the overlooked solutions, that we're in such a hurry to, as I say, get the wrecking ball out and destroy everything under the guise of let's build it from scratch, that we may not necessarily be making the smartest move.
We're talking to Mike Saruk, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything is possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Mike Saruk, a modern-day visionary and futurist. Mike, in 1999, you were awarded the Ellis Island Award with Hillary Clinton, Charlie Rangel, Wayne Newton, and you. That is tall cotton. And to our listeners, you gave the keynote speech that evening. What was that like?
Well, I you know, another one of my favorite sayings is that everybody gets 5 minutes of glory. And boy, I got my 5 minutes of glory. And it was thrilling, speechless, terrifying, all the adjectives you could think of. You know, I've done a lot of, or I made some pretty tough speeches, but that one was particularly tough because I started it out, you know, basically saying, although it was 50 years ago, I remember it like it was yesterday. And I was pulling into New York Harbor and seeing the Statue of Liberty. And, you know, I was a five-year-old kid, and I rubbed the window to see out the porthole, and I asked my dad, I said, what is that? And he said, she is freedom, justice, and hope. But of all these, hope is the greatest. And, you know, that's what this country represents, you know, is just hope. Hope and opportunity and justice. So,
Mike Saruk, when you went to sleep that night, what did you think about?
Gosh, how lucky I was to be here. When I say here in this country.
What do you think your mom and dad said up in eternity?
Same thing.
Let's keep talking about energy.
Sure.
All right? Talk to us about your project in Alma.
Yes. Well, it's again, as I said earlier, it's a when Mike McElroy and I got together, we said, look, I took all of his history. Mike's got me by a few years. And we said, look, why aren't we solving the energy problems? You know, we've gone through a major energy crisis in the 70s. We passed a windfall profits tax. The energy department was created. Its mission, written right there, you can look it up, is that this country would become totally, we would become totally self-sufficient on energy, and we would stop importing foreign oil. Now stop and think about that. We were going to stop importing foreign oil. At that time, we were importing 50%. Fast forward 40 years, now we're importing 80%. Wow. You know? And so Mike and I said, you know, perhaps it's going to take a different approach. And the approach was, let's break down the silos between the energy consumers and the energy users and the really bright scientists and put them in one place and say the mission is to solve our energy and this related carbon problem. And that's what ALMA is. It's a vision to put the brightest people. We have the infrastructure up there because it used to be a refinery. There's pipelines coming in from Canada. Again, we're sitting on a huge reserve of natural gas. Michigan is one of five nationally recognized carbon sequestration centers. Michigan has been determined that it has the capabilities to store all these greenhouse gases for basically hundreds and thousands of years. So it has a lot of the infrastructure, you know, it's got a lot of the foundations in place. What it's going to take is hard work and the putting the pieces together and solving the problem. One of my hobbies is I repair clocks. And people say, well, that's kind of a strange hobby. Well, it is and it isn't. And it dovetails with my business views. Some of these clocks that I get are, in one case, 300 years old. It's got all these intricate little gears. And it doesn't run usually when I get them because I get them for a good price. And I'll take it apart and I'll put it together and I'll take it apart and I'll put it together. And all it takes is one little gear to be misshapen or have a burr on it, and the clock doesn't run. And when you find that burr and you fix that gear, suddenly the whole machinery works. And that's sort of the way I feel about this energy problem. If we get all of the machinery and all the pieces working, we will, like Thomas Edison, finally find the answer to this problem that's been eluding us. And the physics is there, the technology, we know how to do it. It's a willingness to apply the resources and to get the job done.
Your neighbors on your block, every day they see your wife, they say, well, where's Mike today? Well, I think he was in Washington, D.C. yesterday. He's in Michigan today. He's meeting with T. Boone in Oklahoma tomorrow. Then he's going to give a talk in Alaska. I mean, what drives you, Mike Sarup?
Well, it's certainly not the money. It's, I guess what drives me is a willingness to, or a vision to do something greater than whatever the last thing I was. I know once someone asked me, what's your most exciting project? And my answer is always the same. It's the next one.
You relish change. You attack change. You love change. For most people, they hate change for themselves. Change is great for everybody else. Talk to us about that the only constant in life today is change.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that you, and it's not easy. It's real tough to recognize that you don't have the answer. You know, the answer is not in front of you a lot of times. And again, it goes back to, is it risky? Yep. Are we going to fail? Yep. It's just like the story about Babe Ruth. I guess he was the strikeout king of the world, but he was also the home run king. And so you have to recognize that it is risky, but the biggest risk in my mind, I hear this a lot, is not taking any risk. That's the biggest risk.
We're in tough times, uncharted times. Talk to us about getting through adversity.
Well, I'm probably a master at creating adversity. Because when you create change, and I don't necessarily view tough times as quote tough times. They're different times. You know, gosh, when I came to this country, I think my dad had $26. We didn't have indoor plumbing. I mean, you talk about tough times. Living in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, and the only way we could heat the house was to go out in the woods and chop wood and then have outdoor plumbing in the middle of the night. So those were what I call, and to me, they weren't tough times. They were challenging times. And I think we as Americans, gosh, you know, it used to be if you were a one-car family, you were great. You know, we have families now, like my daughter, they have four cars, you know. And so I guess I don't view them as tough times. I know there's a lot of people out of work and a lot of people concerned, you know, about sort of where the future is, you know, where we're heading.
Last question. What advice, Mike Saruk, would you give to our young listeners this evening?
Wow. Well, that's a – what advice would I give young people? I would say study hard, because an education is irreplaceable. And again, everybody has innate talents. Take those talents and do something with them. Even if, like me, my first construction job, I got paid in cast off material. I didn't ask for money. I took nails and blocks and stuff home so I could build stuff. So volunteer, you know, just do something and be productive. And I think that's the most gratifying thing in the world.
Mike Saruk, from all of America, thanks for being the way you are and always trying to make this world better. And thanks for being a guest.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Shalom.